Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're very welcome along to the Big Red Bench on this Super Bowl Sunday. We'll be previewing the big game tonight between the Niners and the Ravens as two brothers go head-to-head on the touchline.
The brothers as head coaches, there's no precedent for it, so it's been kind of... It's been a mad week for the coverage. They did a joint press conference, first ever, yesterday. Their parents are being interviewed constantly. They're both a bit kind of eccentric, a bit insane.
It's going to be an absolutely cracking game. Really looking forward to that one when it kicks off at 11:30 tonight. Also, a first Big Red Bench tonight. We'll be hearing from Beyonce. Also, we'll be reflecting on a cracking night of amateur MMA action with Sean the Machine Tobin.
The place was packed tonight. It was a fantastic atmosphere. Like, and really helps. You can hear all the crowd cheering you on. You know, I know Liam had a massive crowd as well. Like, so it was great for our fight. I think we'd be two biggest supports here tonight. You know, it was a massive cheer. So it's fantastic.
Martin Horgan of Siam Warriors talks to us about his massive upcoming show in March.
Sanchai, who's regarded as a legend in the sport now, and he's a modern day legend, and he'll be at the show, and he's the headline event at this one, and I had one or two other ties saying, please bring me over, could you bring me over, like, so I want to see him go on the I want to go on it, like, you know.
We'll be discussing Cork's performance against Dublin last night, and we'll be discussing the Rebel Og Awards with the January winners, the Newcestown Minor hurling and football teams.
It's unreal, it's unbelievable to win a double county after losing one the year before and to come back with such a young team, so many young fellas, and only three of us up to the age, and it's just unbelievable.
We'll also be hearing from Conor Lehan a little bit later on, and looking ahead to the Irish Clubs match against the English Counties on Friday, all to come between now and 7 p.m. Rory O'Hagan is mine. I'm here with Aidan O'Sullivan until 7 p.m. We want your Super Bowl predictions. Tweet us what you think the score will be. 08, or you can tweet us at Big Red Bench, I should say, and you can text us 083-317-3336 and tweet us at Big Red Bench. Find us on Facebook as well. We're going to start with the Super Bowl preview, but first Aidan's going to get us up to date and everything that happened today.
Yeah, we'll begin with the big game of the day in the Premier League. It was Manchester City versus Liverpool. Here's Shane Pennington.
Manchester City 2, Liverpool 2. Roberto Mancini's men lose ground on Manchester United at the top of the Premier League after an enthralling match with Liverpool Enzo Square. Edin Dzeko taps City in front, only for former City striker Daniel Sturridge to level matters from long range 6 minutes later. Steven Gerrard's 25-yard stunner then had Liverpool in front, but again that lead lasted just 6 minutes as Sergio Aguero rounded Reina to score from an outrageous angle. Lescon Sturridge had chances to win it, but in the end, a draw was a fair reflection.
It was in the earlier kickoff, Tottenham beat West Brom 1-0 at the Hawthorns to move to within a point of third place Chelsea. Gareth Bale scored the only goal of the game in the 67 minute there. Nigeria have knocked tournament favourites Ivory Coast out of the Africa Cup of Nations. The Super Eagles won today on a scoreline of 2-1, while in Scotland, Celtic booked their place in the quarterfinals of the Scottish Cup with a 3-0 win away to Raith Rovers. After wins for Ireland and England yesterday in the final Six Nations games of the weekend, Italy have beaten in France by 23 points to 18 at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. Two Gaelic games and the Allianz Football Leagues in Division 1. Mayo beat Kerry by 15 points to 1-6 at McHale Park. In Division 2, Galway beat Derry by 115 to 15 points at Pearse Stadium. 14-man Westmeath came from behind to beat Louth by 16 points to 2-9 in Mullingar, and Wexford beat Longford by 2-8 to 1-10 at Wexford Park. In hurling, Wexford beat Kilkenny by 2-18 to 16 points to advance to the Walsh Cup final, where they will now face Dublin, while Tipperary booked their place in the final of the Waterford Crystal Cup with a 20 points to 2-12 win over Limerick IT. At the golf, Stephen Gallagher won the Dubai Desert Classic today. The Scot finished up on 22 under par. Gareth Mabin finished best of the Irish on 13 under par. Peter Lawrie ended the tournament on 11 under par. While on the PGA Tour, Padraig Harrington is in a share of third place as the final round of the Phoenix Open is underway. Harrington is 16 under par. Phil Mickelson tops the leaderboard on 24 under par. Both have yet to tee off. And finally, as Rory said, to American football, because the biggest event of the year in US sport takes place tonight as the Baltimore Ravens take on the San Francisco 49ers in Super Bowl 47.
Can't wait. Go Niners! Right. It's the first time in history that brothers have coached an opposing teams as well. A fascinating side story to that game. To look ahead to the game, find out everything a little bit more in a little bit detail, I spoke to Guardian columnist Cian Fahey and started by asking him about both sides' respective seasons.
The two biggest issues are both two changes that were made during the regular season that no one really saw coming. Well, actually, to be fair, the Ravens got rid of their offensive coordinator to completely change the way their offense works. That was seen coming because their previous coordinator wasn't the best and he did get criticised. But because it happened so late in the year, no one expected it to happen this year. They thought it would happen after the season ended, but John Harbaugh, the Ravens coach, decided to do it ahead of the playoffs in order to help Flacco, and it has pushed Flacco to another level during the playoff run. Mm. On the other side, with the 49ers season really changed when they went to Colin Kaepernick, a quarterback. They previously had Alex Smith, who was only looking after games. He wasn't really winning games for them. And that really came to show in the last game, because they were down by 17 points and Kaepernick was the one who brought them back. Even though he didn't actually score the touchdowns, Frank Gore and LaMichael James did, it was his impact on the whole offense and the whole way the defense reacted to the offense that allowed them to eventually get to the Super Bowl.
I was going to ask you, how did Kaepernick change that Niners offense when he did come in to replace Alex Smith?
The thing about Alex Smith is he was the 49ers quarterback for, I think it was 8 years. It was a very long time. And he never really lived up to his billing. He was meant to be a big arm quarterback who could come out of college, who could carry the offense. But his best 2 years came in the last 2 years when he was limited. He was complementing a strong running game and making short throws. He wasn't really, like last year, their best weapon on offense was the field goal kicker, David Akers. And all they relied on Smith was to not make mistakes. Mm. Kaepernick has come in now, and he's actually leading the playoffs in yards per pass attempt and yards per rush attempt. He's just a complete athlete. He's the complete opposite of Alex Smith. He's been there for the last 2 years, but he didn't play last year. He was developing after coming out of college, when he was mostly just using his physical abilities to beat players. The head coach of the 49ers, Jim Harbaugh, has spent the last year and a bit developing Kaepernick so he doesn't make the mistakes that people expected him to. Mm. And now the added dimension of Kaepernick is making it almost impossible to defend the 49ers, because they've got Frank Gore, who can beat them running. They've got the best offensive line in the league, who can beat them by simply running over them. They've got Michael Crabtree outside and Vernon Davis, who make matchup problems in the secondary. And you've only got 11 defenders. If you're trying to look at all 11 players on the opposite side, most teams only account for 10 players because they don't account for the quarterback. Mm. They've got to account for the quarterback now with Kaepernick, because he can take off and run like he did against the Packers when he had 180-something yards untouched before he was even tackled. Mm-hmm.
And he just looks so calm as well. He looks like he's been doing this for such a long time. He looks like an absolute veteran out there when he plays.
It's the one thing that's really stood out with him. He's so, so calm. And it's even off the field, he's been getting criticism for his tattoos and stuff, because he's not, it's not, historically, quarterbacks wouldn't have tattoos. They're meant to be seen in kind of clean-cut leadership way. And it's the old way of thinking that, oh, he has tattoos, so he's doing something wrong, or he's immature or something. But even, he was adopted when he was young, and recently his mother has come out wanting to talk to him, and he's kind of blown that off as well, and he's getting a bit of backlash for that, but it's not bothering him at all. And it's a lot of the development for the last year has been to help him on the field. He's only thrown one interception in the playoffs, and that was in his very first drive. Mm-hmm. And in the Super Bowl now, he's got a team here, and he's the third fewest start of anyone to play or to start a Super Bowl for the career. And Kaepernick, he's the only one of the three who's there by choice. The other two were injured, and they weren't there for the last 30 years. Yeah. I think it was Hill Sims was the last person who was replaced. I don't remember the actual player, the player who replaced him. But he's the only one who's with this little experience to play in the Super Bowl. And you can see why, because he just literally has that aura of someone who's not going to be rattled no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Just looking at the stats, the Niners have never lost the Super Bowl. Is that significant heading into this this weekend?
It's not to me. Those teams were 20 years ago, whenever yeah. it is, more. They had Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, Steve Young, Hall of Famers, and it's got nothing to do with this year's team. People always, it's always brought up for historical context yeah. and stuff, but realistically, what does that have to do with what Kaepernick does, what Gore does, what Patrick Willis does? It's got nothing to do with it.
Odds wise, Keane, the Niners 3.5-4 point favourites for the game. That right with you?
I'd say it's about right. We have to do our predictions this week for the Guardian, and I have the 49ers winning 24-10. I think the 49ers are a much better team, but you have to understand the momentum and the storylines will help the Ravens from a betting point of view. I do expect the 49ers to win. Sorry. I do expect the 49ers to win outright, but I think 4 points is about right.
Talk to me about the Harbaughs and the attention that they're getting this week, because it's such an unusual, such a special occasion. What's going to happen tomorrow night between the two of them?
Well, it's unique. It's the first time it's ever happened. The brothers as head coaches, there's no precedent for it, so it's been a mad week for the coverage. They did a joint press conference, first ever, yesterday. Their parents are being interviewed constantly. They're both a bit kind of eccentric, a bit insane. They're meant to be very, very close. Like, they were asked this week in one of the press conferences, do they remember the last time they had a fight, like as brothers would do, because they grew up in the same bedroom and stuff. And the answer was 2 years ago when they were on holidays, and Jim apparently nearly drowned John in a pool when they were wrestling. So that's the kind of characters you're dealing with. They're eccentric, but very, very intelligent. The whole storyline behind it has been overshadowed this week because of the Ray Lewis issues, and Chris Culliver of the 49ers were both active in the media causing issues. With Lewis, he came back from torn triceps after 10 weeks, and Jim Instruct, the kind of pharmaceutical guy, came out and said that he was taking an illegal substance, deer antler fluid or something that helped him regenerate it, and it's actually on the NFL's illegal list.
Okay.
So there's been all controversy over that, but there's nothing that the NFL can actually do because Lewis has already said he's going to retire next year. And Chris Culliver responded to a question about potential gay athletes in the NFL, and he said that roughly along the lines of, oh, that wouldn't be welcome, keep that away from me, which is amazing for him to say, playing for a team from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So that obviously blew over, and it kind of overshadowed the whole thing. And then you've got the Beyonce lip sync stuff that's been going on about. So it's Super Bowl week, it all goes a bit mad anyway, but that's just an added element to it.
Yeah, Beyonce claims she will be singing live tomorrow. So
did you see her press conference?
yeah, it was very, very good, wasn't it?
It was a smart way to do it. Go about it,
just go out and sing. Go out and sing and prove to everyone that you can sing live. That's the way to do it.
It's
right?
Literally the one way you prove it, you know.
Finally, Kian, who you got?
Oh, the 49ers. I wrote this week breaking down the matchups, and I think the 49ers have the advantage everywhere except for maybe special teams. The one way the Ravens can turn this isn't momentum or anything like that, or fate or anything. It's out down to Caldwell, the offensive coordinator, needs to get very creative, because they need to get more out of their offense than they've even been getting in recent weeks. And in recent weeks, they've been getting more than they got during the regular season. If they have to win, it'll have to be high scoring. I don't think they'll win a low scoring game.
That's Kian Fahid, their fountain of knowledge when it comes to the NFL, a walking encyclopedia. Follow him on Twitter at KianAF. This boy knows his stuff. Really looking forward to the game tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be such an occasion, you know. The build up, you know, the excitement for it is unbelievable. You've got so much going on, you know, that Kaepernick versus Falco matchup, you know, with the quarterbacks. You know, he's been such a fantastic running quarterback. Then you've got, as you mentioned with Kian there, we've got the whole lip sync thing, you know, we've got the whole drug controversies with Ray Lewis. So it's got everything, and I think maybe, you know, a hamburger or two, maybe a soft drink or two, and just sit back and watch. It's going
to
be good.
Really looking forward to it. We were actually mentioning in the interview with Kian about Beyonce. Yeah. She, of course, lip synced that Barack Obama's inauguration. Yes. Got a lot of abuse over that. She claims she didn't do anything wrong. She went into our press conference this week to prove everyone wrong, and this is what happened.
Would you guys mind standing? Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed?
I'm not going to play all of that, but Beyonce proving that she does have the pipes to pull it off live.
Then why didn't she do it for the Barack Obama inauguration?
She said, I can't remember now exactly, but she said that the weather conditions weren't right, that the production wasn't right. She felt more comfortable lip-syncing at that moment in time. So, and she said she was proud of her performance.
Well, there's nothing to do, but I'm just going to have to ring her later and tell her to do it live tonight.
Give her an old text there now later on. So looking forward to that. I'm a Niners fan. Well, I was when I was a kid, I suppose. Yeah. supported Niners a lot. I don't really support anyone these days, but I do have a soft spot for the Niners, so I'm going for them tonight. Haven't watched an awful lot of football this season, so I've been relying on the likes of Keane to inform me of both team strengths and weaknesses. Who you got tonight?
Yeah, I think, you know, the bookies have made the 49ers favourites. They're very rarely wrong, and I think just with the quarterback, you know, the way that he's playing at the moment, I think I'm going to go for him, because as Keane was saying, he brings such a different element to the offence, where the defensive line has to watch him as well because of his rushing potency. So yeah, I'm going to go for the 49ers there.
Okay, we've been asking for your Super Bowl predictions and on text and on Facebook and on Twitter. Just a couple of predictions from Vicky. She says Ravens all the way. Stephen Doyle has the Ravens winning 2017. Steve Brockhausen says he hopes the Ravens beat them by a truckload. Robbie Conn has the Niners winning by 4. Cormac Hughes has the Niners winning 5-3. That's not going to be the most exciting game of all time. To be perfectly honest about it. Elsewhere on Twitter, we've got one or two responses there as well. At Big Red Bench, Sporting Cork has sent us a message saying Niners by 3. Chris Crowley has the Niners winning. He says, that being said, wouldn't mind seeing Ray Lewis win another ring. And Tomás Sheehan says the Ravens by 3. Acres to miss a late field goal for the Niners. Aww. That'll be very, very interesting indeed. 11:30 is the kickoff time for that game tonight. Really, really looking forward to that game. Now, time to talk Gaelic Games, and Cork lost their National League campaign opener last night, beaten by Dublin in Croke Park in a scoreline of 118-29. Aidan Walsh and a Danica O'Connor penalty were the Cork goals. Jay Reiter with the score, .ie, Fintan O'Toole, and he spoke to me earlier before we came on air.
Dublin very dominant, Rory, to be honest, you know, and kind of fully deserving their 6-point win in the end. You know, I mean, they were kind of ahead at half-time by 11 points to 1-4. Cork really, I suppose, kind of fortunate that the goal from Aidan Walsh, which is a very, very kind of well-worked move, but one of kind of their, I suppose, rare kind of attacking forays in the first half that kind of kept them in touch for a lot of stages. But, you know, they were kind of struggling to compete in various sectors, and a lot of Dublin's forwards were kind of making big headway. The likes of Bernard Brogan, Paddy Andrews, they got 11 points between them. Dear McConnell was another to catch the eye, and, you know, I think Cork would be only 4 points during half time. I think they would have been glad with that, considering that Dublin had kind of territorially dominated in the second half. Then, you know, Dublin kind of started to, I suppose, kind of maintained that dominance. A goal from Jim McConnelly kind of, I suppose, increased their lead when he scored from the penalty spot, and Cork managed to get a goal back themselves from the penalty spot when Donegh O'Connor, after Kieran Sheehan had been tripped. But, you know, that didn't really kind of ignite a revival for them. You know, Dublin kind of pulled clear again. Andrews at centre forward, St. Bridges player, kicked a good few points. One of their newcomers, Jack McCaffrey, scored 2 points on wing back, and, you know, for Cork, they kind of missed a lot of chances. Like John O'Rourke and Paul Kerrigan did well, kicked some good points, but ultimately, you know, there was really no complaints.
So what type of team did Connor put out? How were they set up last night? Was there any discerning difference in tactics from the way Cork approached games, say, last year? I know it's early on in the campaign, though.
Well, certainly, I suppose, in terms of personnel, Roy, there was a number of changes before the game from the team that had been announced Thursday night. The two Thomas Clancys, one from Clonakilty, one from Fomoy, both came into the defence to make their league debuts, joining Damon Gallan, who'd already been named in the team. Andrew Sullivan came in at midfield, the partner Aidan Walsh, and John O'Rourke came into the attack instead of Kieran Sheehan. So I suppose it was a very, very experimental Cork team. You know, a couple of the under-21s, our players from the recent successful under-21 teams, given their chance to shine on the senior stage. And I suppose Dublin as well were similarly kind of experimental in that sense. You know, I suppose it'll be interesting from the Cork viewpoint. Thomas Clancy from Clonakilty, I thought he acquitted himself very well in defence. And John O'Rourke in attack, wing forward, is probably their best attacker, most consistent throughout. You know, he looked very, I suppose, bright and busy throughout. Scored 3 points from play. It was also fouled for a free, it was pointed, you know, and I suppose kind of played a kind of direct style of play. But ultimately, kind of in general, Cork, you know, they didn't look very, very sharp. Now Conor Coonan, speaking afterwards, said that, you know, they don't have a huge amount of ball work done, that the emphasis has been kind of physical work so far, so that kind of might have explained it. Still only lost by 6 points, and they did miss a lot of scoring chances. You know, Stephen Cluxton made a couple of good saves from goal, but chances from Colm O'Neill and John O'Rourke, and Cork also missed a number of frees. So, you know, perhaps if they got those scores, it could have been a different story. But, you know, it was difficult to argue with Dublin's win. They were the dominant side, and they deserved to win. You know, so a disappointing start for Cork, and I suppose one they'll want to try and rectify now when they play Kildare next Saturday.
Yeah, how impressed were you with Dublin overall, and what did you make of them?
Yeah, they look good. I mean, I suppose there's been a lot made of the fact that they've have a lot of kind of underage talent coming through from the All-Ireland 21 wins of 2010 and 2012, and their All-Ireland minor win last year. You know, all those players, Jack McCaffrey, I think, on his debut wing back, really caught the eye. He scored 2 points. Kevin O'Brien, cornerback, was quite good as well. Then obviously, I suppose the more experienced players like Bernard Brogan and Dear McConney, they got 1-8 between them. You know, Stephen Cluxton in goal was very solid, and he was actually, it was announced after the match, he's going to be the captain for them this year. And then Paddy Andrews, a centre-forward player, I suppose, who's kind of been around the panel a bit over the last few years, he got 5 points on play, so he was kind of another who caught the eye. But look, I think, I suppose, both managers were keen to stress afterwards, it was early days, but in the, I suppose, in terms of the context of the division, it's a very competitive Division 1 this year. I think most teams just kind of want to stay up, given the quality of teams that are there. And, you know, you're seeing like Kerry and Donegal also suffer defeats this weekend. So I suppose, you know, Cork will be kind of eager to bounce back next Saturday, especially given the fact that their opponents next Saturday, Kildare, had such a good win last night against Donegal.
Yeah, I was going to say about that Kildare game under lights next Saturday night, which should hopefully draw a crowd next weekend. But you mentioned Conor Coonan and the focus on physical work, so a lot more ball work needed perhaps in training this week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he said there was a number of aspects of the game that they weren't happy with, you know. I mean, like I said, in the first half, you know, the Aidan Walsh goal kind of kept them in touch for long stages. You know, Dublin were ahead with 7 points to 1-1 at one stage. Probably should have been further ahead given the kind of possession and the way they kind of dominated territorially, you know. So, I mean, I suppose, look, they only got kind of 2 games in the McGrath Cup this year, Cork, haven't played a game in a couple of weeks, you know, obviously without a number of experienced players, a lot of maybe fringe young players starting. So maybe, you know, the defeat wasn't a huge surprise in that sense. But, you know, definitely I think it's, you know, the kind of sharpness, and I suppose the ball work was kind of a big thing that he was kind of keen to stress in the press conference afterwards.
That's Fintan O'Toole there of the score.ie talking to us about last night's game. Cork had beaten by Dublin last night 118-229. Conor Philpott has been in touch via Twitter saying it's hard to see the Ravens taking it tonight. Could struggle to put up points. Flacco struggled with short and intermediate passing. Cheers for that. Send in your Super Bowl predictions to us. You can tweet us at Big Red Bench, or you can text us on 0833 173 336. We have a post on our Facebook page as well. And Paul wants to know who's playing in the minor match tonight, Aidan.
I'm not quite sure. Is it?
Yeah, our Team Wise band is providing the backing to Beyonce tonight as well. So it's going to be an absolutely cracking evening in New Orleans tonight. Right, going to stick with Gaelic Games. Time to talk underage Gaelic Games and the Rebel Og Awards taking place last Monday evening in the Rochertown Park Hotel. The awards are designed to recognise the achievements of clubs and individuals at underage level. And Cork's Red FM are proud media partners to the awards. Now, the Newcestown Minor Hurling and Football teams were the winners of the January award. The Minor A Hurlers defeated Ballyhea in the Minor A Hurling County Final. The Footballers defeated Doheny's in the West Cork Divisional Final. I spoke to both captains at the event, Hurling Captain Andrew Shorten and Football Skipper Peter Curran, and we'll start with Andrew.
It's unreal. It's unbelievable to win a double county for losing one the year before, and to come back with such a young team, so many young fellas, and only 3 of us up to the age, and it's just unbelievable.
Tell us about your own involvement with the club. I'd imagine it goes back to a very, very early age.
Yeah, back from playing under 10, 12, all the way up, and all the lads, and we're all together, and to win something in the end. We didn't win much up through the years, and to finally win it meant an awful lot.
I suppose that's the key, in fact, that you've been playing with each other year on year, and you know each other so very well at this point.
That's the thing, like we all know each other so well. They're all great friends, and say after you lose one to win one, and we were losing plenty of games back through the years, and we finally came out and won it.
Tell me, how important is the club to Newcestown itself as a whole?
It's massive, it's massive, especially might be considered more of a football club. We won the hurling as well, and both together is just unreal.
Now tell us about your path to the final and how you got there.
Started off we played Clidove, and that was a bad wet night, and wasn't a great night for hurling at all, but we came out of that, and so we scored a few goals, and goals won the game for us. And then we moved on, we played Aaron's Own, and we expected Aaron's Own to be a huge team, and they're a big senior hurling club, and we went out and we weren't afraid of it one bit, and we came out of that with a win, and all the way to the final against Russell Rovers. And that wasn't a great night for any fierce windy night, and we finally pulled through anyway and won the East County.
Must have had a big crowd out supporting you that night as well.
big crowd out, everyone came in fairness, and everyone was there to support us. It was brilliant.
As captain, is there any kind of added pressure on yourself? I mean, like, I know the guys would look up to you as captain, so do you feel that pressure from the team or anything like that?
I know there might be more added pressure with some teams, but with us, every fellow was able to control himself, and I know you'd have a few words with a few more fellas, but it was no more added pressure than usual.
Came here with Peter Curran at the Rebel Oak Awards for January, and first off, Peter, it's I suppose a fantastic honour for the club to be given this Rebel Oak Award.
It is, yeah, I suppose, for a year. We've put in a lot of effort putting the hurling football, and sure, it's nice to have this at the end of it after coming out two counties, and it's nice to get this at the end, I suppose. Like.
I suppose unprecedented success, both the hurlers and the footballers winning in the same year.
Yeah, it was great. Like, we went out last year, got nowhere in the football and the hurling. The year before, we went all the way to the county, we lost that. And sure, after coming out after that, again, we wanted to win it, and after winning the hurling, then sure, we pushed on. We said we might as well go have a crack off the football, and got that in the end as well.
There's something I touched on with Andrew there, was I suppose the close bond that you have. I mean, like, you've been playing all the way up from a very young age, you know each other quite well, so I suppose that's reflected in the success that you're having now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, sure, we're all friends there, we're all going to school together and everything, like, we're going out together, and sure, there's only a small group, like, so there's not much going on. You know, there's only three of us up to the age the last 2 years, I suppose, like, so that's all there is. The three of us are here now, like, and yeah. You know, there's a big group, well, under 17 there that year, there's a big bunch of lads, like, so it makes a big difference, like.
And I suppose it's a testament as well to the hard work that your coaches have put into you all the way from up to underage level up to where you're at now.
Yeah, it is, like, it's not easy going out every night of the week training, like, training there as a few children and everything, they all have children, they all have their own lives, and you know, it's hard to get out every night and do it, even for us, like, with involved in so many other sports and everything, like, sure, it's hard to get out, sure. We done it and we got there, and thankfully it paid off, like.
Tell us about your path to the final and how you got there and who you beat in the final and stuff like that.
We went out first in August against Island Rovers. We beat them. It wasn't a great game, but we beat them anyway, and we met Donnie's in the final the week after the Hurling County, and beat them by, it was a two or three points, and that was a good game, tough game, and we had Western Gales in the semi-final of the county. They thought they were going to be a lot better, but they gave us a good game in the second half, and coming to the final then, we met Inniscarra, and we were lucky to win that with the last minute goal, like, so it was tough enough at times, but we scraped over and we got the win.
And as captain, lifting that trophy must have been an extra special thrill, I suppose.
Well, after our year, wasn't the most exciting year, but that final was. After, well, the last minute it was torture. Just,
yeah.
We thought we'd have lost and managed to scrape a goal in at the end, so yeah. It was a great feeling after winning that.
As captain, something I asked Andrew as well was, do you feel any added pressure as being captain with the responsibilities that you have as being the skipper and I suppose the other lads in the team looking up to you and stuff like that?
Not as such, really, you know, like, you know, I was always kind of one of the oldest players on the team, so there's always the responsibility is always kind of there, like, and they've done it before, so you know, I was kind of used to it now at this stage, like, being the oldest and all that.
So as a player now for you, what's next?
Push on now, back training already, hurling, going back, we're in the gym there as well a few nights a week and that, like, so get back now, and we've under 21 in a few weeks time, so try and concentrate on that.
Yeah, that's the Rebel Oak Awards that took place earlier on in the week. The Newcestown Manor team's being presented with the award for January after the fantastic year they had, winning the Minor A Hurling County Final, defeating Ballyhay, and winning the West Cork Divisional Final in the football, defeating Donnies. That was Peter Curran, the football skipper, and first we heard from Andrew Shorten, the hurling captain. Still to come on the show, we are going to talk MMA, a fantastic night of MMA last night in Silver Springs. Also going to be looking ahead to the massive Muay Thai night coming up in Neptune Stadium. We're also going to be talking rugby between now and 7 on the bench.
Red FM's Big Red Bench with Reardon's on Washington Street. Probably the best bar in the world.
104.6 Cork. Right, time to talk MMA, and the MMA clinic held their third amateur fight night at the Silver Springs Hotel last night. A cracking crowd as well, 700 people turning up to watch 14 excellent fights on a card that was headlined with Kieran Daly and Paul Kavanagh finishing in a majority draw. Sean Tobin co-headlined in his last amateur fight before turning pro. He defeated Liam O'Griffin by first round TKO, and afterwards I caught up with the man they call the Machine.
I came out, I tried
tried to close the distance. But I knew Liam was a very dangerous striker. He was standing, he threw a nice kick there. And as soon as I saw him get close to the cage, that was my aim was to shoot, get him to the cage and get him down. Which, luckily tonight, it all went to plan, like, you know, tonight. So everything I've been training for, it all came full in the end, you know.
I suppose it's no surprise when you see you putting guys on their ass and pounding them.
That's what I've been kind of known for now. Like, it's my game plan every fight I go in. Like, I'd like to try and show off my hands sometimes, you know, but so far, it'd be nice to throw a few strikes more often now, but so far the wrestling is doing very well for me, you know. It gives me the advantage, you know. People I fight, they're strikers, that's their advantage, so like, why play into their hands when I can do my own advantage, you know?
Now, I know you're a Limerick boy, but you're pretty much an adopted Cork only at this point, according to the Echo anyway, during the week, and a fantastic crowd here and a great reception when you walked up.
Yeah, it's a massive crowd here. Like, I'm living here now myself, so I can train full time. And crowd, like, the place was packed tonight. It was a fantastic atmosphere, like, and it really helps. You can hear all the crowd cheering you on, you know. I know Liam had a massive crowd as well, like, so it was great for our fight. I think we'd be two biggest supports here tonight, you know. It was a massive cheer, so it's fantastic.
Your last fight as an amateur, kind of a bit, I suppose, bittersweet, I suppose. Or are you really looking forward to moving on to the pros?
Well, it's just nice to get over that last hurdle, you know. When it was announced that I was going to go pro and then I just won more fight, so that gives it a chance for something to go wrong, you know. So that's why I wanted to go out there tonight and get the job done as fast as possible, or even and not make any mistakes, you know. I didn't want to look ahead to the pro fight, but, you know, like, I knew that was coming up, you know. I knew a slip up tonight would take that away, you know, so I couldn't afford to make any mistakes.
That's what I was going to say. Because of turning pro after this, and you needed, I suppose, a win tonight to keep the momentum going, so did that add any added pressure to your performance?
A bit of pressure. Like, if I hadn't won tonight, I don't think I would have felt myself that I wasn't ready, you know. Yeah. So a loss would have been disastrous after all the plans I've had at the gym with Stuart and everything, you know, for turning pro. So it was just, that was the thing, just getting over the last hurdle and not making a silly mistake, which is, in this game, anything can happen, you know. So I just wanted to get over the last hurdle.
A fantastic performance from the MMA clinic tonight, 8-3-1 on the night. A fantastic performance by everyone at the gym.
Yeah, everybody did fantastic. Even the guys that came up a bit short, they fought their hearts out. Like, and I train with those guys every day. They train as hard as professionals do, like, you know. They give it their all. Like, and for the guys making their debuts tonight, I was very proud of them, you know. I'm delighted for them.
Now, Rory, you were at the event last night. You were comparing for the event. Before I ask you about the event, there were strong rumours you were involved in a Westlife get-together with the fantastic get-up you were wearing. Was there any truth to those rumours?
No. You were saying that constantly excited to come to work wearing this. Yes, excited to literally had to fly up there.
Flying with our wings up there, maybe?
Oh, dear God. And so, yeah, it might have looked like I was...
Was Nicky Westlife there and Keane and all the guys? And
I'm
Shane.
Way better looking than all those guys from Westlife.
Mark and all those lads, but they're there.
You seem to know an awful lot about Westlife.
Well, you're in the band, not me. What was the event like, though?
It was an absolutely cracking night. There was 14 fights on the night. There was 12 guys from the MMA clinic fighting on it. There was a massive crowd there. There were 700 people there. Yeah. Really, really high standard of fighters. There's some amazing fighters there. There's the likes of Kieran O'Brien, who was absolutely amazing last night. James Brennan, absolutely brilliant. You had Sean, who I interviewed there, who's turning pro after this fight. He's going to go a long way. Kieran Daly, who headlined the fight, thought he might have gotten the win, but it ended up with a majority draw. Absolutely cracking out of fights, very, very high standard, and MMA really, really growing in Cork as well. It's only going to get bigger and bigger, and I think last night's show proved that it is on the verge of something massive in Cork, and with clubs like the MMA Clinic and Shan Skull and K2C around Cork, it's only going to get bigger. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's so popular now. Do you think that many more fighters maybe can, you know, move up the level, even to professional level?
Oh, big time, yeah. I mean, like, as the fighters I mentioned there, Sean Tobin is turning pro. Kieran Daly's definitely going to turn pro. I spoke to James Brennan last night. He's got his eye on turning pro. Kieran O'Brien is going to turn pro, and he's going to turn a lot of heads. He's absolutely fantastic. I think all the guys there, they train like professionals anyway, so turning pro won't be that big a deal for them, so I think they'll be certainly ready for it. But it's really, really enjoyable. If you want to hear more as well from the MMA Clinic's Amateur Fight Night, you can log on to redfm.ie/BigRedBench, and there's interviews there with James Brennan, who I mentioned, very talented fighter, and Kean Smith, who won his MMA debut last night and got Fight of the Night honours as well. Really, really enjoyable fight. So redfm.ie/BigRedBench for more on that. Going to talk Muay Thai now, and a massive night taking place in Neptune on March 9th. Siam Warriors host The Gathering, which will feature the cream of Cork and Irish talent along with international fighters and one of the biggest names in Muay Thai, Chan Kai, who headlines. Cork's Red FM media partners for the event. We can't wait. Really enjoyed the last show. Really looking forward to this one. As always, the man behind it all is Martin Horgan. I spoke to him earlier this week and we started by looking back on their events last year.
Two shows last year. The first show was last February. We did 8 men and it was the first one in the country, and it was a phenomenal success. There was again another full house, 1,600 people there, and the reception of the fight is growing. We're bringing in bigger international fights all the time. And then we had a second show in October. We brought in the Muay Thai world, Thai boxing world, a European superstar who takes on the top Thais, Liam Harrison. He had a bit of an easy fight in the night, like, but he was still fairly spectacular, along with some other big Irish names, Anthony Kane, Craig O'Shea, some spectacular knockouts on the night. And our own fighter, Aaron O'Callaghan, he pulled off a massive successful fight, being a 3-time world champion, Andy Housen, and really the crowd rallied behind him, and the support and the atmosphere of the fights is incredible these days.
That was something I noticed on the night. It's something about Neptune Stadium, it's the metal roof, I think. The atmosphere is fantastic in there. But the fans are responding and your crowds are getting bigger with each event you're putting on.
Absolutely. I think the knowledge of the Thai boxing itself is growing by people, like, and even people outside the gyms, their friends are starting to come to the shows a lot more regularly, and they can see, like, they see a lot of people are cheering if there's a bit of a brawl or things going on. But they must remember it's not boxing, it's Thai boxing. And it goes from Thailand, and the Thai scoring system, to kick score more, making a guy miss, answering back. That they're the important things. Like, you know, if you make a guy miss and answer back the kick, and the knees are very effective. Not to say that when you land heavy shots and you're shaking a guy up with punches, they're all scoring as well, or throwing a fella off balance. The crowd, sometimes they'd be wondering about a decision, but the judges are all international judges. I don't use home judges, I don't use Irish judges, I use the international judges, so there's no mistake or hometown decisions or anything like that.
Now, Martin, when you're planning an event, do you have a wish list of big international fighters you want in your show, and how do you go about contacting them and stuff like that, and how do you get them on your show?
Well, the reputation for the gym and the club of ourselves, the CIMR, is starting to grow now a lot, and a lot of big fighters are actually asking me to go on the shows. I was at a show in Italy now the weekend, and there was 12,000 people at the show. Some of the top fighters in the world were at it. And I was sitting down just chatting away in the lobby of the hotel with a few lads and I have Sanchai, who's regarded as a legend in the sport now. And he's a modern day legend, and he'll be at the show, and he's the headline event of this one. And I had one or two other Thais saying, please bring me over, could you bring me over? Like, so I want to see him go on the I want to go on it, like, you know.
It must be a nice position to be in, though, when people are asking to be on your shows as opposed to you chasing up guys constantly.
Yeah, I'm getting some really interesting offers for some big promoters to ask me could I help them organise shows here in Ireland. But we'll keep it one show at a time, you know, we see how we go, and things are growing nicely, and I hope to bring some other big fights for the club to raise awareness of our own club and raise some funds for the club as well, like, you know.
As mentioned, Shankai's on the card, but who else should we be looking out for on the night?
On top of Sanchez, he fights a top European, Hakeem Benoui. He's really good, fights in all the big shows around Europe and Thailand, and he's going to give Sanchez a good fight. As I say, Sanchez is an incredibly skilled fighter, but Sanchez comes forward. Benoit comes forward, and he will give Sanchez a go, like, and we'll see what happens on the night with that. We have Rung Ravi, who's an exceptionally aggressive fighter, extremely strong, aggressive, and he's up against Dean James of England, who is voted most technical international fighter outside of Thailand last year as well. And it's going to be a real chess match between the two of them, because Rung Ravi is very aggressive, Dean James is so tactically aware of things, making people miss and answering back. So that's going to be a really interesting fight, like.
And a lot of guys from your own gym and from gyms across Cork as well, and Aaron O'Callaghan's fighting on the night, and if it's anything like the last night, he'll bring the house down again.
Absolutely. Aaron at the moment, he pulled off a great fight at stepping up to Andy Housen, a 3-time world champion. He's fighting a fighter from Belgium who's also lost out in the close European title himself. He actually beat Aaron in Belgium. It's very close. They both fought to the bell, but you know, you're away in different countries, so he's got. I'll make sure that we rematch, set the record straight there, and that's what I like to do. I like to make sure, build my lads, and I always match my lads with lads higher than them, because at home you could match a fighter with someone and people won't know that the chair from, he knocked him out, it's great, he looks great. But in the world of the sport, then people can, they need to know who you are fighting the better guys, and that's what I do. I match with fighters with better guys.
Yeah. And I'd imagine in the build up to events like this, the atmosphere and the buzz around the gym is electric.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, for the show now, I think we have from my gym itself, we have about 8 fighters on. And it's a bit of a core promotion. Spartan Thai in Ballincollig, they have about 8 fighters on as well, and Seamus Corgan's helped me out with the show, and we're doing this as core promotion of the show.
And I suppose for your own gym and for Spartan, it's important for guys to see when they're training that there is not an opportunity for them to fight in big massive cards like this.
Absolutely. Like before, everyone would do smaller shows, a couple of hundred would be happy. Like most shows around the country, they might be lucky to get 200-300 people, 400 people, and they're good crowds, and it's great for everyone to fight in front of them. But this is real. I've spoken to fighters who are quite experienced walking in front of people, and they say when they come out to Neptune and the crowd is like, you can feel the atmosphere, and you can feel the, everyone gets great reception there. Yeah. Even when the foreign fighter comes out, everyone gets a great reception, and they say it's a real yeah, intimidating atmosphere. Not intimidating as the crowd is coming at you, but they enjoy the atmosphere as they walk out. Like they're I suppose the hair stand up on their back, really, like, you know, getting ready for the big night.
I suppose we're 5 weeks out from the event now. Is, I suppose, all the hard work from your side is done now in the organising point, is it, or is it still ongoing?
The biggest thing was it takes a while to sort out the international fights, because they get offered fights everywhere. Sanchez, he's an incredibly busy fighter. He's fighting Australia. I was just seen him at the weekend there in Italy before that, and he was in Hong Kong, he's in France, they're all at big shows. It's a coup to bring him here, like, you know, to pull him off something like that, like, you know.
And I suppose as a motor, you get slightly worried every time you get a phone call or a text wondering if it's an injury pullout.
Absolutely, when you see someone's name it pop up, but at this stage I'm fairly used to it, and if something comes up like the last time, Aaron, I was bringing an Australian fighter for him, and, very good entertainer. It got cancelled because he had a bereavement in the family only a few days before, and I got in Andy Houston, so I remain fairly calm, and I have ideas. I'm here to bring in replacements a lot of time, you know.
Well, Martin, best of luck. We can't wait for it. We had a great night the last night. We're really looking forward to it again this night. We're the media partners, so we'll be pushing it mad over the next few weeks, and best of luck with the next couple of weeks.
Thanks very much, Rory.
That's Martin Horgan there of Siam Warriors, putting on a massive show up in Neptune again on March 9th, featuring Shan Chai. As you heard Martin mention, one of the legends of Muay Thai. It's going to be an absolutely cracking night. We were at the last one just before Christmas, and it was really, really enjoyable stuff. So really, really looking forward to that event again, and we'll be building up to it over the coming weeks. Now, before we hand you over to Ashley Keating for Green and Red, going to talk rugby in a special game on next Friday night in Temple Hill as the Irish clubs take on the English counties in an international match. Cork Irons, Gerry Hurley will captain the squad, which includes several experienced players at this level, such as former captains Frank Cogan, Simon Crawford and Sam Cronin. So look ahead to the game. Joe spoke to Ireland coach Conor Toomey.
We've had two camps for the last two Sundays, and the final squad has been selected for, and it will be announced Sunday morning, but we're kind of in the middle of the AIL season, so the guys have matches tonight and they have matches on Saturday, so all going well. If they all pass, get through them fit, you're kind of relying on them getting through the AIL games, which is very important for them, you know.
How difficult is it for you as a coach to prepare for a game like this? Like you said, the lads have AIL games, and you can only kind of get together a handful of times, I suppose, before it.
Yeah, it's different to the club scene where you're kind of preparing them from way out and you're getting your game plan and all that sort of stuff together. But we kind of get the players involved heavily, you know, and keep the game plan as simple as possible, because combinations will be different and fellas will have tried to get used to each other. So we try and keep everything simple but effective is probably the game plan, and then try and have a bit of fun so that the guys are kind of in good form, and give them a bit of responsibility and ownership in what they're doing on the pitch, you know. So there's a lot of experience in this squad, so a lot of them know how to play the game better than any of us know how to coach it at some stages. So we kind of try and keep it simple. That's the main thing, and that's all you can do when you have such a short space of time. Same for England as well. They're only coming together as well, so hopefully it's kind of a clash of two kind of simply well prepared teams, you know.
Absolutely. And like, I suppose it's such kind of a novel kind of meeting. It's the clubs versus the counties and the lads representing their country. Is there a real hunger for it, a real desire to do well?
Yeah, well, talk to the players and you'll see the hunger of it, because I suppose with the way rugby has gone, you have the professional game and the amateur game in Ireland, and for a guy who's an amateur player who works or studies during the week, it's his outlet to play rugby, and this is his only outlet to get an Irish cap and wear a green jersey. So, you know, you see, the players take huge pride in it because they're getting capped for the countries and they're presented with caps on the night for the new caps. I think we have 10 new caps coming into the squad for next week. Their clubs take unbelievable pride in it, when you know that their players have been representing Ireland, so, and their families take huge honour in it as well. So it's like, it's the highest part of the amateur game as such in the country, so players really buy into that, and so do their clubs and so do their families. So it's a big night out for them, you know.
Yeah, you announced the squad there recently, 26 players. Was it hard to whittle it down to that even?
Unbelievable, yeah, because usually we start off at 44, and we have four provincial selectors around the country, and between the manager and the assistant coach, myself, we try and get to all as many AIL games as we can, and then we ask the clubs to nominate players as they see fit. So it's really like the old way of picking an Irish team, so it's really kind of word of mouth and getting to see guys and so on and so forth, and the difference between guys is very minimum, you know. Like the standard of player would be the number 7 for Cork Conn versus the number 7 for Gary Owen. There isn't much of a muchness between them, as an example, you know. So you're trying to pick the best, but you can't pick them all, or you can't get them all out in the field, so it is quite difficult, you know.
Yeah, it's your own second year involved. I know you were involved in the Irish team at that last in Preston last year. Do you feel, having that experience under your belt, you feel a lot more confident coming out of this year?
Oh yeah, well, year one is kind of finding your feet and trying to work it out for yourself. But year two, when you'll ask any coach in any code, year two is always an easier because you've just gone through it yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And you only have 2 years at it as a coach, so the IRFU do a fantastic job for kind of coach development. You're given 2 years and then it'll be passed on to another coach, you know, so it's great experience from that level, you know.
I suppose having the players together for such a short space of time, it's tough to implement a kind of a specific style of play or a pattern of play in the team. Is it down to actually trusting the players that they'll kind of perform on the day, kind of?
Yeah, and I suppose completely, because the profile of the team, like you're either going to have a big pack or a small pack, or good backs or bad backs. So the profile of the team is really the starting point, and the players are we're not playing league rugby, which can be very tight rugby, and it's competitive rugby, so and the pace of the game, when you have 30 good players on a pitch, the pace of the game becomes different, so it becomes a different style. So last year, a statistic from the Scottish game was like there was only 2 balls kicked by Scotland, everything else was, they ran the ball, you know. So the pace of it is, it's a totally different game from what they're used to playing week in and week out, so and they're high scoring games as well. For the last 6 years, the scores have been quite high, so they're very entertaining and full-on games, you know. So that's what we're hoping to get out in Conn next week.
Excellent. Do you know much about England at all?
No. All I know is they picked 22, and I think they have the same number of new caps as we do. And what you ask anybody about England, and is that they're going to be very extremely big, extremely strong, and extremely fast. Their selection and their choice of player is huge compared to our pool, you know. So they will be big and they will be fast. That's a guarantee. But the team that we played last year in Preston, was they had an excellent team, you know. They had a very quick back three and just a massive pack. So I think we'll have to cope with that as well next Friday night.
And it's the first time it's out of Dublin as well, and coming down to Cork and Temple Hill, a great venue as well for something like this as well. And it's great to see it down in Cork, I guess.
Yeah, and I was delighted, obviously, being from Cork and not having to travel. And you can see the effort that Finian O'Driscoll and Brian Humphreys out in Conn are putting into it. You know, Conn are determined to kind of put on a good show. The pit, they have a fabulous setup now with their new clubhouse. And there's no internationals in Cork, you know. The under-20s playing at Lone. The A-team, I think the A-team played in Connacht last week, or the Wolfhounds playing Connacht, and the national team obviously playing Dublin, so there's no outlet for international rugby in Cork. So having this down here, it's kind of a spectacle itself. We're delighted, and the treatment we're getting from Cork on is unbelievable, and in the preparation they're putting in for it. So what we're hoping for is the Cork crowd, the Cork rugby public, will come out and support us, because it'll be a huge challenge for us to beat England. So having every bit of support out there will really help us.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like it's going to be a highly entertaining game. Do you feel you've got enough quality in the squad that you'll come out on top?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully. The quality is there, you know. But like the team we're playing will have equal as much quality, if not more, and they're such a strong team. But we're confident at the moment, but hopefully on the night we'll get it right. But not to say it won't be a tough game, but hopefully we'll put on a show anyway.
Yeah, that's Ireland coach Conor Toomey. They're looking ahead to the big game taking place in Templehill on Friday. The Irish club's taking on the English counties in an international match. Should be really, really good. We'll have reaction on that game on the Big Red Bench this evening from 6 p.m. Elsewhere, we were looking for your NFL predictions for the Super Bowl tonight. Joe McCarthy's been in touch via Twitter. We're at Big Red Bench. Going to go against the grain and predict the Ravens win with their defense mangling Colin Kaepernick on at least 5 occasions. And there seems to be some sort of rule when you're talking about American sports that you have to say defense instead of defense.
Yeah, I also like the word mangling in there, getting it into American sport. I think that's quite good.
Should be very good. Paul Healy says it'll be a close game. Niners to shade it. Lisa says the Ravens all the way. And Jonathan Toohey has gone with the obligatory Niners, 217 to 114.
And did you find out who's playing the minor match?
No.
I think it's a camogie game, actually.
Is it? Should be interesting stuff. Looking forward to the Artane Boys band there tonight, yeah. Performing with Beyonce. That's our show. Thank you very much for tuning our way. We're at redfm.ie/BigRedBench. At Big Red Bench and on Facebook as well. Ashley's up next with Green on Red. We're back next Saturday from 6. Enjoy your evening, folks. We will talk to you then.
Red FM's Big Red Bench with Reardon's on Washington Street. Probably the best bar in the world. 104 to 106. Cork's Red FM.